short time ago, an American airplane dropped one bomb on Hiroshima.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this.
The American people, I think, is good people. They have not to charge with the guilty of all the lies.
Good. Back to the Cold War, episode 214. Papa Bear,
How are you?
I'm good.
How are you?
I'm good. Oh, I'm great. Good. Yeah, thank you for asking. I'm great.
Yeah.
Scratchy throat. Hard to talk. Scratchy throat. Trying not to cough too much.
Right. Well, we appreciate that. The scratchy throat can be sexy, so I say go with it. There we go. You got my attention.
I've been listening to a lot of Bob Dylan recently. I've been listening to Tom Thumb's blues versions over the decades. Right. You go back to, you know, 66 or whatever. He's like, when you're lost in the rain of Juarez and it's Christmas time too. And then you watch him in the 80s and the 90s, right. And it's, and the rain is in season time too.
Would it be fair to say his lifestyle choices caught up to him? I don't know.
When your gravity fails and negativity won't pull you through. Hey, wow, he's still going. You got to hand it to him. He's still going.
He's got it.
Hey, I thought he was good for him. Bob Dylan was like an old relic. When I was a kid and I was like, oh my God, Bob Dylan's still alive. I remember discovering in the 80s that Bob Dylan was still alive. And I was like, holy shit, really? He's still alive?
He and Keith Richards, they've drunk from the chalice of life that the Jesus Carpenter drank. I don't know. I wasn't there.
Anywho, we left last time, the US were retreating, not retreating.
Just advancing in the opposite direction.
Different direction, according to both General O.P. Smith and Chesty Puller. On the 1st of December, 10,000 men of the 5th and 7th Marines began a 14-mile fighting retreat from Udamni to Hagaruri. This is going from basically up at the Chosin Changjin Reservoir, trying to get all the way back down to the port of Hungnam in the Sea of Japan so they could get the fuck out of Dodge.
Right. But first they have to all meet up or as best they can at Hagaru and then go south to Kotori and then go for the port city. And in those miles, they will experience a new kind of hell.
Yeah. The Chinese are attacking them at each pass, machine gunning, mortaring every point on the road. Chinese would sneak up, destroy an American vehicle, which would halt the line, which was already going at a snail's pace. Again, as we said last time, it's the middle of winter. Yeah. It's minus 20 degrees Celsius, minus 4 degrees Fahrenheit. Things are freezing. Yeah. Their feet are freezing. They got frostbite. Their food's frozen. Their weapons are frozen. Their vehicles, if they stop, take hours to restart. The petrol freezes up. It's just a living nightmare.
Right. Not only that, but there are roughly 1,000 vehicles in this convoy, and there are parts where the snow is up to their hips, so they're having to push through the snow. Hopefully the vehicles can go first and clear a path, but the Chinese quickly figure out, all we got to do is run in there. Yes, we're going to lose some men. We might lose everybody, but we're going to send a small group at the convoy, and as long as we can take out one Jeep, one truck, one whatever, it's like you said, it's gonna make the whole process stop. And then we have that much more time to attack them in the rear or let Mother Nature take care of it. So you said this last time, Chinese are experienced soldiers. They know exactly what they need to do. Yes, they're suffering with the weather too. But as far as military tactics, they've got this shit down.
Yeah. The Americans and the British finally got to Hagaru, which is the first stop after Udamni. Right. But meanwhile, I want to talk about the political situation. MacArthur can feel victory slipping through his fingers here. His big, bold, we're going to the Yalu, is being crushed.
Manicured.
By the Chinese, who let's recall. Exactly. He was convinced he'd scared the Chinese off. That they weren't going to intervene. And he was very, very wrong. So he's getting crushed here. It's embarrassing for him. And on the 3rd of December, the Army Chief of Staff, General Collins, flew to the Far East to investigate the situation. MacArthur told him that their choices lay between escalation or humiliation. Those were the two options they were facing.
I don't like either one.
He said without reinforcements.
Let me guess what they picked.
Including the use of the Kuomintang troops that Chiang Kai-shek had been offering from Taiwan, air attacks on Manchuria, a naval blockade, and the use of atomic weapons, he could not hold a tenable position in Korea.
Total war. Wipe them all out. I mean, if I can't win, they shouldn't live. Wipe everything, everybody.
Well, it's already been total war up to this point in Korea. He's saying we need to take it across the Yalu River. We need to attack China, use nuclear weapons on China. Now, keeping in mind here that the Americans are invading another country, China's defending an ally. Yeah. The Americans could say they're defending their ally South Korea from the North Koreans when they believed it was the Soviets that were behind it. But this is on the Chinese border. This is extremely more relevant to the Chinese. The Americans are the invaders here, but he wants to take it to China and use nuclear weapons. Now, Washington, though, is reluctant because they realize, or they think they realize anyway, that if they go to war with China, this is basically a full-scale war. And that the Soviets will get involved.
The draft,
everything. They're back in. Yes. And they're still rebuilding because, remember, after World War II, Truman decided to just wind down the military, stripped it
slashed.
Back. And now they're trying to rebuild. They haven't really finished that process.
Takes years to rebuild.
And they still think that that Moscow's behind all of this, and they think that if they get involved, it's going to be a full-scale World War III.
Right.
They genuinely believed, it seems, that China wouldn't have had the cojones to attack them in Korea if they weren't getting the support of Stalin and Moscow. Now, we know that Stalin was like, just let them have North Korea. Who cares?
It's not worth it.
We'll deal with it later.
Not worth it.
We're not ready.
Yeah.
A bit like he did, he did his the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact. Brain was going Mobbentrop, and I'm like, that's not right. Mobbentrop?
That's not right.
The Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact with Hitler was it 39?
1939,
September. Because he wasn't ready to fight the Germans at the time. Stalin.
I need more time.
Yeah.
Need more time.
Needs to buy time.
Well, they got their, he knows he's not ready, so I'll sacrifice whatever to buy time. And the Americans are like, we can't take on China, much less take on China and the Soviet Union. But here's MacArthur going, take them all. I can take them all. Kick us some ass. It's crazy. But he wants to use atomic bombs. That's cheating.
Now, the Americans were convinced that the Chinese wouldn't be doing this off their own bat because they have slanty eyes. And, them Asians can't think good. Was basically the strategic thinking here coming out of Washington.
Right. Unless it's laundry related, the Chinese don't know what they're doing. Don't quote me. That was not a Ray quote.
Dens. That's all they were good for.
Okay, two things, laundry and opium.
Now, of course, Britain wasn't very excited about the idea of getting involved in another global war either, particularly as they figured it would basically start in Europe. Americans aren't going to get bombed, probably, directly, World War II. Europe is going to cop the brunt of it again. Yeah.
You see those oceans? We're good.
Yeah. The UK and the rest of Europe are still trying to recover. It's only been 5 years since World War II. They're still trying to recover from that. Fortunately for the world, the British are inventing brutalist architecture. I'm going through a brutalism obsession now. You can't see, but the desktops on my monitors are brutalist wallpapers. I'm sort of obsessed with brutalism at the moment, but that's another issue. I might do a podcast on brutalism.
Define that? What is that?
Brutalist architecture. Oh, it's the post-World War II architecture that was basically, I mean, brutal comes from the French word for concrete. It was basically large, very simple lines, concrete structures that were used around the world, particularly in Soviet countries and in the UK after World War II, using concrete because it was seen to be cheap and easy to easy, quick, cheap, and eventually came to a lot of people hated it. Came to symbolize sort of urban decay in the 80s, 70s and 80s. Because concrete,
that's cool.
Some of the designs were shitty, and some of the concrete started to fall apart, and it would get dirty
for a couple decades.
Hard to keep clean. Yeah, it looked really messy. But at its best, they're magnificent. Like some of the
edifices,
yes, and some of the brutalist buildings that were built in those decades remain today as absolute architectural icons. But, you know, like everything, like with history podcasting, there's us and then there's the rest of the fucking amateurs doing their shitty little
the masses.
History podcast. So, you know, we take it to a high art.
Then
your fakers like your Carlins and your Duncans and everyone else, they just kind of fuck around the edges, you know.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Let's continue.
Yes.
So the American thinking at the time was if they did go to war with China, even if it didn't end up in World War III, the US would be pinned down fighting against China, which would leave Europe exposed to the Soviets. They thought that this was possibly a deliberate strategy on behalf of the evil commies, that the Chinese would tie up America here and Europe would fall to the Soviets when America's back was turned. America would be fighting the second team, is where they referred to it, of China, while Moscow basically took control of Europe. Dean Acheson, again, Secretary of State at the time, said that the U.S. getting involved with a war with China would be welcomed by Russia. It would be a bottomless pit which would bleed us dry. Of course,
any proof
that would come a decade later in Vietnam. But, you know, he could see that happening at the time. So the general feeling in Washington was they wanted to avoid a direct general war with China. And also their allies wouldn't support it either for all of, you know, for all of these reasons. You know, the fact that it would turn into a war in Europe that no one else was ready for. Now, the other thing that was happening in Washington at the time was because they were convinced that this was all part of a grand Soviet scheme to take over the Far East and Europe, they figured that their preparedness for Soviet tactics under NSC 68 was not sufficient. They had underestimated Soviets' willingness to march to war and take over the world. So they wanted to scale up American preparations for this, what was they were convinced was going to quickly turn into an all-out war with the Russians and the Chinese. Bit like bit like where we are today, quite frankly. You know.
Well, we just assumed back then and today, we just assumed the worst of our adversaries or the Russians, whatever you want to call it. And like you like to make jokes about constantly, you know, the Western press, Putin is this brilliant guy who's like 10 steps ahead of everybody. But even back then, we're assuming the worst of the Soviets. We're assuming the worst of Stalin. We're assuming that he's completely in control and we have to gear up for this without a shred of evidence. No one's saying, oh, by the way, here's a smoking gun. I mean, we're just, we're projecting maybe, I don't know, onto the Soviets, but either way, we have determined that they are up to something nefarious and we have got to stop them.
Well, yeah, it gets back to what we were talking about in the bullshit filter this week, offensive realism, John Mearsheimer's book, The Tragedy of Great Power Politics. This idea that the way that states think is they don't trust other states. They basically assume that other states are conspiring to attack them or take over their shit or, take their allies away from them so they can white ant their support, their coalitions. And so because they believe that to be true, they figure that offense is the best form of defense. So they're always trying to secretly attack their enemies and take their shit away and grab their allies. And they're always always fighting economic propaganda and, if needs be, military wars against their enemies because they don't trust their enemies not to do it to them. It's strike first. Strike hard, no mercy.
Fuck.
The Cobra Kai motto. So the other thing that the US decided to do then is they needed to strengthen NATO by appointing an American commander and committing additional US troops to NATO. And, of course, the person that they appointed was...
Who did they appoint? I'm weak on my NATO history. I've never paid attention to NATO. I've never needed it.
Some clown called Dwight Eisenhower was made the head of NATO forces.
I should have known that.
Yeah, on the 16th of December.
Okay.
So the U.S. is scaling up their military budget. On the 15th of December, Truman declared a state of national emergency, started, issuing bigger draft numbers, more money. Eisenhower goes to NATO. And on the 20th of November, a couple of weeks earlier, this General Collins himself had authorized a study of the use of the bomb against targets in Korea, Manchuria, and China. So this wasn't just MacArthur who was thinking about using the bomb.
Right.
This was coming straight out of the Pentagon. They were thinking about using nuclear weapons. On the 28th of November, the Joint Chiefs ordered a further top-secret study on the employment of the bomb in the event of Soviet intervention, quote, to discourage such intervention and or to assist in the evacuation of UN forces from Korea.
Wow.
So this was serious stuff.
And I think Dr. Strangelove was in on some of those meetings, and he said, look, an unused weapon is a useless weapon. You've got nukes. Use the nukes. Nukes are the way to go. And he probably said it more eloquently than that, but you get the gist.
Well, basically, he's paraphrasing Truman because on the 30th of November, Truman gave a press conference. Journalists asked him, Mr. President, I wonder if we could retrace that reference to the atom bomb. Did we understand you clearly that the use of the atomic bomb is under active consideration? Truman said, always has been. It's one of our weapons.
God damn. And you know Truman will use the bomb. That's the motherfucker that used it twice. If anybody's going to use it, your best chances are it's Truman.
Yeah.
Damn.
Now, he may have just been trying to warn the Russians off. He may have just been dangling it in front of them.
Rattling the saber.
He kept saying things like this in his speech. He said, we hope that the Chinese people will not continue to be forced or deceived into serving the ends of Russian colonial policy in Asia.
Right.
Because.
And everybody over there is going, what? Who? What?
Slanty eyes, no think good, was his the rest of that line. We know they're not doing this off their own bat because slanty eyes, no think good.
Right.
Good for getting rid of cows and stains, apparently, but
sure. Other than that, yeah.
This is more from his speech. Recent developments in Korea confront the world with a serious crisis. The Chinese communist leaders have sent their troops from Manchuria to launch a strong and well-organized attack against the United Nations forces in North Korea. This has been done despite prolonged and earnest efforts to bring home to the communist leaders of China the plain fact that neither the United Nations nor the United States has any aggressive intentions towards China. Because of the historic friendship between the people of the United States and China, it is particularly shocking to us to think The Chinese are being forced into battle against our troops in the United Nations command. The Chinese attack was made in great force and it still continues. It has resulted in the forced withdrawal of large parts of the United Nations command. The battlefield situation is uncertain at this time. We may suffer reverses as we have suffered them before, but the forces of the United Nations have no intention of abandoning their mission in Korea. If the United Nations yields to the forces of aggression, no nation will be safe or secure. If aggression is successful in Korea, we can expect it to spread throughout Asia and Europe to this hemisphere. We are fighting in Korea for our own national security and survival. Of course, in the American view, an American invasion of Korea is not aggression.
We're the victims.
Yes.
I cannot stress that enough. We are the victims. Now, and all this, and I'm not even going to mention the part where all this got started because we sent American troops ever closer to the Chinese border. Got nothing to do with it. We are fighting for our lives.
No, this all started because you sent, I think it was Dean Acheson,
went to the
38th parallel and was looking over into North Korea with binoculars.
Pointing, like, hey, look at me.
Yeah. Yeah. And also said in the speech when he was talking about all of the parts of the world that were important to the United States in terms of strategic interests, didn't mention South Korea specifically.
We call that an oopsie in the State Department.
Yeah.
We're very sorry. Wow.
The origins of the aggression, as we talked about many, many times, but just to remind people, is this whole idea of North Korea invading South Korea when the division of the country was artificial to begin with. It was supposed to be temporary just to get rid of the Japanese. The U.S. had refused to unify the country. Several attempts by the North to, and the Russians to get a model by which both the Russians and the Americans would pull their troops out and they would unify. The Americans didn't want to do that because they believed it would end up as a communist country.
Right.
So they just decided to make South Korea an independent country. And then when the North did the same thing and then tried to unify their country. It's a civil war, basically. When they tried to reunify their country, the Americans intervened to stop that from happening. But it's not aggression if America does it. It's only if you look it up in an American dictionary, Webster's one of those. If you look up the word aggression, it says anything other non-Americans do.
That sounds right to me.
By very definition.
Yeah.
Chinese are being aggressive, though, because they're defending their border. So that's aggressive, technically.
Shame on that.
Acheson on the 28th of November said, "Our great objective must be to hold an area, to terminate the fighting, to turn over some area to the Republic of Korea, and to get out so that we can get ahead with building up our own strength and building up the strength of Europe." And he speculated even at this point about the possibility of a ceasefire around the 38th parallel, just going back to the status quo of before the war. Which was what the major allies wanted too. Let's just go back to where we were before.
Right. Yeah.
Except the South Koreans. They didn't want to accept that. As we know, Syngman Rhee wanted to and had planned to unify the North and the South. He wasn't happy with going back to the status quo. But it's interesting to me that Acheson was already floating that idea 3 years before it actually happened.
Yeah, we're going to have to lose thousands more men before they actually implement that. But
But
you're there
hundreds
now.
Hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, exactly.
Millions more.
Exactly. And I'm sorry, I did not mean to leave out the Koreans in that. I apologize.
No, you didn't mean to. That's normal American perspective. They're just worried about the white people dying. It's the Asians, they're laundrymen. Like, who's going to miss?
I'll let you know when you're wrong. Okay.
He'll stop me when I'm wrong.
All right. So I will stop you in your tracks when you're wrong, but not yet. Yeah, not yet. So where were we?
Yeah, well, Acheson's point of view was if they conceded to China, it would bring about a total collapse of the Western position in Asia. Japan would lose faith in U.S. guarantees of protection. The French would abandon right. Indochina, and that's apparently a bad thing if the French pull out of their little yes. Asian colony. The Jesus. Soviet Union would collect the stakes, in Acheson's words, through their Chinese right. satellite, which was how he perceived it to be.
Right. Can I ask real quick? So out of your research, you're quoting Acheson, you quoted Ike and others. It sounds like the Americans are sitting around talking to themselves, determining what others are thinking. Is there any serious dialogue going on between the Americans and the Chinese, the Americans and the Russians? Are we just assuming the worst? We're talking to ourselves. We're getting ourselves worked up. We're writing this in our diaries and journals, and we're making these secret plans, and we're going to build up our army. But it sounds like a one-sided conversation where we're the good guy and everybody else is the bad guy. I mean, it's not like there's a breakdown in dialogue. There is no dialogue.
None that I've come across, yeah. I mean, they don't. Okay. They're not really trying diplomacy here at all. I mean, yeah, there's no attempt to sit down and work out their differences here and come up with some sort of a plan. It's just, fuck you guys, we're going to war.
Right. We're going hard.
Yeah. Now, there's also okay. the domestic political situation in the U.S. to consider here. We know that there'd just been an election that Truman had barely won. He's getting hammered by the Republicans. The Democrats have been in power now for quite a long time. And they're getting hammered by the Republicans. Obviously, you know, Roosevelt had been hammered and his memory is being hammered for giving in to Stalin too much mm-hmm. during the Yalta negotiations. The Democrats right. Are always the always open to being criticized for being weak on communism, weak on Stalin, weak on this, weak on that. So, right. so as we've talked about many times before, Truman feels like he needs to yeah. look tough, act tough, speak tough, sound tough, crack down. Republicans were just constantly criticizing the Democrats' track record on foreign policy. Acheson mentioned, sort of alluding, I think, to McCarthyism, the American people would not understand a policy of appeasement in the Far East and resistance in Europe. If we give in to China, right. why are we giving in to the commies in Asia if we're not if we're fighting them in Europe? That doesn't make any sense. It's you know, all for one and one for all against the commies.
Right. What I learned from the West Wing, and I learned a lot from the West Wing, but wouldn't a really good leader be able to, to a degree, explain the situation to the Americans? Hey, you don't want your boys over there dying. I don't want to send your boys over there to die. Let's find some other way to deal with this. I mean, that's obviously, you know, far from perfect, but a really good leader would try to maybe explain something to the American people just besides Truman whipping his dick out all the time and look how tough I am. Look, I mean, it's just macho bravado bullshit just because he's being picked on by the Republicans. Fucking grow up. You're the president of the United States. But he can't. He doesn't want to give into he's given into the pressure, and he's just going to ramp up the war. That's my take on it.
You have a take?
You can respectfully disagree if you want. But Jed Bartlett would have explained it to the American people in such a way, it would have been an awesome 12-minute speech. They would have went, oh, okay, let's stop fighting. Let's bring our boys home. But I'm done. While you're looking, you probably know the famous clip from West Wing about why are we fighting? Why are we doing this? And Leo McGarry says, it's what our fathers taught us. Fight, 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 win, 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 never back down.
Victory is mine! Victory is mine! Great day in the morning, people. Victory is mine.
Morning, Josh.
I drink from the keg of glory, Donna. Bring me the finest muffins and bagels in all the land.
It's going to be an unbearable day.
I love that. Oh, love that. Josh. I would have slept with him. Yeah. Straight up, just letting you know.
So Washington, though, had trouble publicizing its real motives to the American people. They couldn't say,
right.
You know, we can't we can't settle with China because the Soviet Union's the real enemy. This would probably just get people to demand a war against the Soviet Union if they thought they were behind this. They're really feeling like they can't do anything here. They can't attack the Chinese because it's just going to make it worse. Then British Prime Minister Clement Attlee flew to Washington on the 4th of December to meet with Truman and Acheson and these guys. He told them that the idea of MacArthur with an atomic bomb in his back pocket filled the British people with horror. We already know that they didn't like MacArthur in the first place. They didn't trust MacArthur. Yes. The idea of him with a nuke in his pocket, in his pipe, scared the hell out of them. Again, pointing out to the US that if the Soviet Union got involved in a war, Europe would be the ones to suffer, not the US. Attlee also pointed out that the US should not be so quick to assume Russia was behind Beijing's attacks. He said, maybe slanty eyes think good. And they went, no, slanty eyes not think good. He said, maybe they should make peace with China by giving Beijing a seat in the UN, in the process de-recognizing Chiang Kai-shek and the KMT. They might be able, if they offer China that, some recognition, they might be able to decouple China and Russia. If there is, in fact, a coupling there in the first place. So he's got ideas for avoiding a greater war, but Truman and Acheson weren't buying it. Truman said he was in no mood to give in to that vicious government, which was actually the Russian government. Acheson said the Chinese communists were looking at the matter not as Chinese but as communists who are subservient to Moscow. So, again, they just refuse to – I mean, it gets back to this thing that I've talked about a lot on the Bullshit Filter recently. When people are convinced that something is true, they will develop a cognitive bias which will make sure that any piece of data they get, they will fit into that cognitive bias, the narrative that's stemming from that. You just can't have an intelligent conversation, a rational conversation – with people that have already decided something to be true without looking at the evidence before they make their decision. And these guys were in that camp. They weren't willing to listen to anything that Clement Attlee had to say, particularly when he argued that they should return to the situation that they had in the mid-40s where the UK would have a veto over the US using nuclear weapons.
Oh,
that was part
Truman probably
of the original deal, right?
Sorry.
The original deal between Roosevelt and Churchill was that they were collaborating on the development of the bomb. The UK were providing materials and science, some scientists for it or some scientific research anyway. And then the US finally decided, fuck the British. We don't.
They're junior partner at most on a good day, if I'm feeling generous.
Why?
And we don't have to check in. Yeah. Is this another clip coming?
Yeah, it might be if I have it. Because we've got the bomb, okay? We've got the bomb. Dennis. What's his face? What's his name? Dennis. Not Dennis Miller, the other Dennis.
Dennis. Leary?
Leary, thank you. Dennis Comedian? Leary, We've got the bomb, okay?
And at the time, you did.
Yes. So Attlee was told no, having a veto over the bomb. Truman did agree to consult the UK before they used it.
Yeah.
But Acheson immediately went, Mr. President, you can't do that.
Fuck them.
That's a breach of the Atomic Energy Act. The Atomic Energy Act stated that the US would not consult with any allies or let any allies know before they were going to use the bomb. No other countries. It was total US hegemony over the bomb and their decisions to use the bomb. So he went, oh, shit, I can't even do that. If we use it, you'll probably find out about it in the paper next day.
How about a compromise? Mr. Prime Minister, I just pushed the button. Yeah. Good? We good? All right, have a good day.
I'll ring you and let you know. Yeah. now, the British, Attlee, also said, you know, this whole MacArthur thing, we're not really comfortable with MacArthur. He's obviously botched the whole fucking thing. Can you, how about we have a UN military committee that oversees the whole operation? MacArthur reports to the UN military committee. And Truman and Acheson got quite angry at that.
Yes.
Apparently they felt that would diminish the view of MacArthur's performance and therefore the US's performance, not looking good from an optics perspective. And also said that he didn't want the US bitching about Eisenhower taking control over all the NATO troops in Europe either. Which proves yet again that this isn't really a UN action. When one of the permanent members of the UN Security Council says, how about we make this a UN thing? The Americans went, no, fuck you, and don't ever bring it up again.
Right.
So.
Right.
When they say it's a UN action and the UN forces and this and that and the other, it's really an American operation with, you know, some of the UN allies, mostly the UK, supporting it at this stage. It's not really – it's not a UN operation. It's a US operation, and the US are determined to maintain complete control of it for a variety of reasons, one being optics.
And the UK is – absolutely, sorry. And as the UK is quickly figuring out, this partnership is – less a partnership and then more, you're one of my lackeys, just do what I say, give me political cover, and I will make all the decisions and do whatever I want, including dropping an atomic bomb. So, wow, things have changed a lot since the days of Churchill and FDR.
Now, when Putin threatens to use nuclear weapons if anyone gets involved in Ukraine, there's outrage.
Horrible.
Outrage. Yes. How could he do such a thing? It's madness. Demonic. Madness.
Yes. Yeah.
But when Truman did it 70 years ago.
Oh, hero.
And Americans love Truman. They love Truman. Yes. Truman said, well, of course we're talking about it. It's under active consideration. It's one of our weapons. Okay when the Americans do it. Not okay when the Russians do it.
Not unlike invading countries. Again, it's okay when we do it because we're the good guys and we're the heroes of our own stories. Mm. I don't know how the rest of you can't see that.
Back to the Marines and their retreat or their attack in an opposite direction. So the next destination was Koto Reef, 38 hours march away through freezing cold. Now, this is where I think you said this at the end of last episode. They're discussing the difficulties in getting their chesty puller climbed on a box in the briefing tent and said, I don't give a good goddamn how many Chinese laundrymen there are between us and Hungnam. There aren't enough in the world to stop a Marine regiment going where it wants to go. Christ in his mercy will see us through.
Hell yeah.
So on the 6th of December, they set off, taking all of their dead with them. Now, I found this fascinating.
Yes.
They had trucks piled with frozen dead corpses, limbs sticking out all sides, that they were taking with them. O.P. Smith had said that they would all make it back, dead or alive. What do you think about that strategy, Ray?
The Americans, and this is the American Marines we're talking about here. They weren't going to leave anybody. They were like, we're either going to stay here or we're all going to leave, but it's going to be together. And of course, the British Marines are like, this is a little fucked up. This is like the beginning of a really bad zombie movie or something like that. But the Marines have this code. We will not leave anybody behind. And as they're going down the road, they actually come upon where the Task Force Drysdale was wiped out, or parts of them anyway, and they pick up those bodies too, load them onto the truck, and keep going south as best they can. So the British think it's a little weird, but you know, it's an, like you said, it's an American show. They're going to do what they want to do. Admirable. I don't know if it's militarily sound at this point when you're trying to get the hell out of Dodge, but they have a code that they live by. What do you think of of collecting bodies along the way.
Well, look, I get all of that, but where are they taking them exactly?
They're going to take them to... Do they bury them in Coto Maria? No, they bury them in... It's either Coto Maria or the port city. Shit.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. So they bury them down the road anyway. Why not just bury them where they fell in the first place? What's the difference in burying them in one small town or another small Korean town?
Well, remember when I told you I would let you know when you're wrong? Again, you're not wrong.
I didn't...
Maybe we could do a ceremony. We can have speeches and a priest in a more controlled environment versus we're on the run. But I see your point.
That was probably it. They probably just didn't have the space of not being attacked to bury them. I thought if they were taking them back to the U.S. to bury them at Arlington or something, okay, fair
that
enough.
That would make but sense.
Just burying them down the road, I was like, oh, fucking waste of time.
Well, as we're going to see, the ground is frozen hard, and when they go to make the graves, they can't with the conventional shovels, so they use unconventional. They use C3 explosives or whatever the heck it is. And so, maybe they needed time and preparation, but still a little odd considering they're running for their lives.
You know my theory?
What's that?
Well, they were running out of food on the retreat.
Oh, here we go.
Right. And, they're like,
A good hamstring. Done just right with a little
waste.
Parsley.
Like, we might need those bodies.
Cannibalism. But that's what the U.S. Marines did. That they brought their bodies with them.
Good thing that they're frozen solid and not rotting on the trip back. So they, of course, they're attacked constantly on the road back. Another 103 killed and 506 wounded on the next leg to Coto Rhee. So much for Christ and his mercy, as Chesty Puller said. Didn't have a lot of mercy on those 600-odd people. Now, because they've collected men along the way, they've got 15,000 men and 1,500 vehicles, including the garrison that they collect at Coto Rhee. And they set off again south for Ham Hung, and then the port of Hungnam, where they can jump on boats and get away. On December 4th, the Joint Chiefs cabled MacArthur and said, "The preservation of your forces is now the primary consideration. So forget occupying, forget fighting the enemy, just don't lose everybody.
Get out."
Is now number one goal.
Survival.
2 days later, 6th of December, the communist forces occupied Pyongyang, and the day after that, the Allied front was only 20 miles north of the parallel at its northernmost point.
Oh, my God. All that lost.
The Marines arrived in Ham Hung on December 10th. Then they got to the port, and then they got on the ships. 100,000 men, U.S. Army, Marines, ROKs, and they sailed away to Pusan before the port of Ham Hung was blown up by the U.S. Navy, more out of frustration than military necessity.
Right. Yes. I did want to mention one thing. When they were at Coto Rhee, the bridge was blown. They had to build another bridge. We don't have to go into that. But as the bridge was blown, when all the Allied troops got across the river there, on the other side, staring at them in disbelief, were 3,000 Korean refugees who had been following them the entire time. Went, "Oh, we thought we were coming with you." And the Americans are like, "Yeah, a military necessity, blow the bridge." And they did. And those people were trapped on that side of the river with Chinese troops all around. So again, they're just cutting, they're no loyalty. They're just getting the hell out of there. Staggering losses. And again, it's not good for morale for the, and the other thing was that the Americans were pissed and depressed because they were told that they had won this war already. In fact, there was a big parade being set up for them in San Francisco. They're probably not going to make it.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to make it in time for Christmas.
No.
So they were pissed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, if you read the contemporary modern history books, they talk about the Marine performance under O.P. Smith as heroic because they, managed to get out, most of them. managed to retreat, took their equipment, exactly, held the line, didn't bug out. I'm not sure I consider that heroic, personally. Right. When you're an aggressor, an invading army, and you manage to get out, that's not heroic. That's not my definition of a hero. It's not somebody who invades another country and then manages to get away. I don't find that heroic. I think they were definitely, showed bravery and courage, mm-hmm. and it must have been hell, sure. their extraction. But all these books talk about it as heroic. I think that word needs to be reserved for people that are doing good things, not people that are invading third world countries to, enforce their will on them. I don't find that heroic at all.
Right. And as we're going to see, this was the only positive thing to happen to the Allies in that winter. And so because of that, you've got to give it a spin. You've got to give it a label. You've got to come out with some kind of way to justify saying we kept our honor. And this is what they chose. They focused on the U.S. Marines coming out, keeping most of their equipment. This was their narrowly defined sense of courage, not victory, but a heroic gesture on the Americans' part, because it's all literally all they have.
A partly successful retreat.
Right. Yes. But the fucking Americans are going to cut now that they're out. When they told MacArthur, preserve your men, the signal was probably because we're going to regather and we're fucking going back. But first they have to get the hell out of there.
Yeah, so the battle above the 38th parallel is over. Marine Corps alone suffered 4,418 battle casualties and 7,313 non-battle casualties, mostly
Jesus
cases of frostbite. Again, a bit like Napoleon's retreat from Russia, lost more people to frostbite and the cold than to actual bullets. From the prisoner of war interrogations that the US did afterwards and documents that they managed mm-hmm. to capture, they believe that the Chinese had suffered 37,500 losses in the Chosin campaign.
Right.
Again, many of those from the cold. Do you have any total numbers on X-Corps casualties in this part of it?
No, I just have the 4,000 and the 7,000, but I did want to say real quick that 37,000 men, if that's accurate, yes, that's a lot of deaths, but when you're defending your border, it's a price you pay. But I don't have any other larger Allied numbers.
When I've got 10,495, that's U.S. X-Corps and Republic of Korea I-Corps. All up. So, yeah.
So that might be, yeah.
And then I think the Marines are on top of that.
Right.
So anyway, it was brutal for both sides. And, of course, the Chinese are fighting an immeasurably superior army here with more money, more advanced equipment, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Oh, just before – I know we're getting near the end, but I just wanted to say there was one American who was captured. He was roughed up. They left him for dead, but somehow he survived. He had frostbite in his hands and feet. His hand was practically severed off, and he had lead in his head. He has flown back to Japan. He will spend a year and a half in a Japanese hospital or in a hospital in Japan trying to recover from what happened to him in just a matter of days. And he was the one who was – he went into the army because he needed some money. He was barely done with basic training when he was shipped off to Korea. So that was his experience. He's going to spend a year and a half in a hospital trying to get over what happened to him on this great offensive.
Mm. Well, the last stages of the American retreat and evacuation, they didn't get attacked much by the Chinese because the Chinese, too, were spent from the cold, supply lines through the cold, etc., etc. Hunger. They were suffering from the same sorts of things the Americans were, and probably more so. But you know, they had managed to do what would have been seen as impossible for most people, certainly most Americans, just a month earlier. The fact that a bunch of Chinese laundrymen could drive the combined US and UK troops out of North Korea in a couple of weeks, it was had people's heads spinning. They must have been absolutely just shocked and floored, and it must have been hugely embarrassing. Like, this is after World War II and before Vietnam, when Americans still thought of their military as being unbeatable, the greatest military in world history, et cetera.
The greatest generations.
And in most regards, they were absolutely right about, you know, the American military. But here, here they have a bunch of Chinese laundrymen who had, you know, lived in a country that was mostly poverty stricken, and had just come out of a brutal and long civil war that had been going on for decades. They managed to just very, very quickly, destroy the American army and its reputation in a matter of weeks. Within two weeks from inception, they'd driven them out of North Korea. Now, General Armand wrote, "We are having a glut of Chinamen," and he hoped he would have the chance later to, quote, "give these yellow bastards what is coming to them. How dare they defend their border and their allies?"
Bastards.
MacArthur told Washington that the KPA was completely defeated, this North Korean army, and had suffered 335,000 casualties with no forces left. Thus, he said, a new and fresh Chinese army now faces us. Truth, though, at the time was the KPA forces far outnumbered the Chinese forces at this juncture. You know, MacArthur's intelligence is not great still at this juncture. Right. He's got the complete wrong picture of what's going on. When the Chinese entered the fighting at the end of November, he had radioed back that the entire Chinese nation is in an undeclared war. But really, they had barely begun. Yeah. If he thought that was the entire Chinese nation, he had no idea what was going to come in the next phase of the war. The reality is that by late 1950, the total of enemy forces in the north never outnumbered the UN forces, even though MacArthur was telling Washington that they were massively outnumbered by the Chinese and the North Koreans. What the Chinese did was exploit night maneuvers, feints, bugles and whistles that they would blow. There's a lot of this in the movie, actually, using these whistles during a lot of the attacks to make the UN think that they were surrounded, but really they were scrappy little guerrilla actions from the Chinese in many cases, just terrifying the fuck out of them. But the US had convinced themselves that they were surrounded by a million Chinese, and, you know, they did their own propaganda war on themselves. It was a, an own goal.
Jesus. Yeah. Well, the Chinese Civil War that just ended, like you were talking about, they used all that experience against the Americans, and it worked brilliantly. The Chinese did not have planes. They did not have tanks. They had mortars. They did not have artillery for long range, and yet they were able to do what the Nazis could not.
Well, that is the end of this episode, and I think we'll take a break from Korea now. That's the end of the first phase of the Korean War. The UN, US, UK
and on troops a high note.
Pushed out the Chinese pushed out of North Korea within 2 weeks. It's an amazing story. And check out the Battle of Chongjin, the Battle of Lake Chongjin, the film, if you get a chance. You know, yes, it's a sort of rah-rah China, but it's amazing cinematography and beautifully shot. And but if for nothing else, just to give you an idea of the brutality of the war from the Chinese perspective in particular. All right, we got to go. Take care, buddy.
You too.
curtain has descended across the continent.